guns. You could always trade things for guns. Roses and question marks. You get a lot of things out there. But now that's all gone because of all the murders that took place on Craigslist and the personals.
Well, I thought it was because people started, like, singling them out for, like, internet prostitution. Because I remember just seeing, like, a rash of stories about the roses and the
question marks. Yeah.
It's like, can you really just, like, say any old other thing and we'll pretend like it's not what it is?
A poor guy shows up with 150 roses.
150 roses, which cost $3 a piece.
And a stack of Guess jeans. It's just like, I'm ready to do this.
Spent $450 on roses.
It's about a minute after one right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. But, you know, it's interesting. Because what do you know about your state representative? What do you know about your state senator? I'm going to go with nothing. I'm going to go with absolutely nothing.
I got a name.
I'm going to go with more than nothing. You know their name. That's good.
Their name is, and the only reason is because, well, they knock on your door in the suburbs anyway. I think in the cities, they tend to lean more on machines or, you know what I mean, party affiliation and groups that get the vote out more than just knocking on doors.
Right.
Or maybe just because they never knocked on my door when I lived on 39th and Prospect.
Well, right.
As a child. Sure. You know what I mean? That wasn't... I mean... Yeah, I would say, like, in the cities, that's still pretty much how it looks like they do it anyway. But, again, I don't know. Have you had a
people
politician knock on your
sure.
door?
I mean, come on. I live in Hyde Park. It's not the hood
right.
anymore.
Right.
It used to be. Now it's a nice place to raise a family. For the most part.
If you homeschool. I shouldn't badmouth the school.
No, didn't you hear the Kansas, Missouri School District didn't really get provisional accreditation, but they got the promise of future provisional accreditation.
But here's the hard thing about that, and it is hard because I really, honestly and sincerely, do not want to.
Was it 7 or 8 out of 10 students in the Kansas City, Missouri School District are still below proficiency?
No, the goal.
And the goal is just 50%.
The goal is, no, I think the goal is to have 70% proficiency. 7 out of 10. Which
right.
you just threw out as like, well, they're barely making it. But that's acing the test. It's a sad state of affairs
I'm saying they were high-fiving themselves.
Over like less than half or
no, no, but
right
that's,
at half.
No, they're at, they're right now they're at 7 to 8. Out of 10 are not proficient, but they're excited.
Are not proficient
right now. 7.
So 20.
It was 7 or 8 out of 10. 70 to 80% of the students are not proficient in math, science, or reading.
And that's an improvement over like.
Well, they're just saying their test scores have improved in the last year.
Right.
But you know who is really excited about all the school district in Kansas City, Missouri, improving itself, and maybe, you know, since it has not been taken over by the state yet, and they're hoping, you know who's really excited? All the other school districts that are around the Kansas City, Missouri school district, because there is a state law that has already been put into use
right,
in
they
St.
Have
Louis.
To take these students.
That, yeah, the surrounding districts, if a district has failed and loses accreditation, the districts around that school district that has failed at being a provider of education will have to absorb students if they choose to. And that's already taken place in a couple of school districts in the St. Louis area. So you had all these superintendents from the surrounding school districts elated at this fact, really high-fiving each other, but I think it was more like a low five, doing a lot of low fives in the press conference.
Right.
Because they're incredibly...
each other.
Yeah. So, thank God. One more year, and I'm going to retire, and I won't have to think about this ever again. Stressful thing.
It's very sad, is what it is, that, you know, there's all these people that... they can't freaking get out of the city, but they're not going to have any schools. And it's the district's fault, right?
Is it the district's fault?
The district leadership.
I mean...
the board.
Schools are generally only as good as the parents who send their kids there. That's why the school districts in the suburbs are so much better because, I mean, by and large, you're talking about... a per capita, you know, population of students whose parents, you know, have education themselves or at least value that education to a certain degree. When we're talking about poor people, you know, black, white, any other color in the spectrum, talking about people who generally aren't going to value education very much.
Right. Well, I'm going to get in trouble because I'm going to kind of bridge that right with this I Have a Dream March on Washington, 50-year anniversary just went by, and like, what's the state of the dream and all that stuff, right? It's like, that's absolutely true what you just said. It's just like the parents, the district's only going to be as good as the parents that are there. And I didn't watch like all the speeches and whatnot that were there, but I heard some of the clips. And, you know, the call for, you know, retaking. There seems to me that there's a lot of focus on these voting issues and those things. And while those are probably still good fights to have or at least discussions to have, it seems like this issue... it should be a bigger part of the NAACP and that kind of thing. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? This issue of how we raise our kids, how we participate in schools, how we, you know what I'm saying? Because that's what's the bigger disservice to, like, because I completely agree with you, because, like, where I live... not a scientific study, but most of the parents that I meet, well, I wouldn't say most of the parents, but a lot of the parents that I meet in my kid's school do not have college degrees. You know what I mean? They're workaday guys and girls, right? But they have kids, but they are involved in the school and they are, you know, trying to better their kids' education. So it's not just that you have to have had an education in order to value
it.
So what we've got to do is focus on improving the value of education on, and I always go back to 39th and Prospect because that's where I grew up, right? But we've got to improve the value of education, and I don't know how we get to that point. You know what I mean? That's maybe an internal, I'm not asking you, because not that you're not involved in the community or whatever, but you know what I mean? That's more of an internal question to, you know, because I look at Kansas City as a black school district, right? I mean, it's probably the wrong way to do it or whatever, and I'll probably get beat up here in a moment, but that it seems like that's the corner that we've got. I don't want to say the corner. That is a corner that we've got to turn, right, is to increase that value within the community. And I'm sorry.
There's nothing to apologize for.
That's the...
the intangible nature of you know, solving a problem that seems pretty immense.
One of the best... arguments I've ever heard for reparations wouldn't be to peoples but communities. So like the lowest rung on the economic socioeconomic scale is the where the money and attention is focused. So instead of disbanding, scattering these students out, that should be an obvious, region to uplift in other arenas besides just the school, the community itself. You know, resources for parents, teachers, and children outside of the school in those areas. I mean, because obviously, like you're saying, the parents being at to blame initially, you know, the community itself, you know, I don't think you can have a subpar school district in a not well-to-do, but a well-adjusted, a higher... It seems like these areas deserve, help in other arenas, and then the school would come after that, whether it's blight or, drug addiction or violence.
Yeah, these are the problems that we're just seeing throughout this country in, the urban core of so many of these cities, ours included, is that there is no economic opportunity for people. There's no opportunity for people to do anything other than one of three things.
Sell drugs,
catch bullets, or go to prison. That's it. That's all there is. And it's incredibly sad. I guess there's the fourth way.
Pro ball.
The whole, is that Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle? I mean, he's talking about going to the inner city, high school, and he's like trying to give the motivational speech on getting out of the ghetto. He's like, at the end, he's like, all right, you got to learn how to dance or sing or play basketball or something. Get the hell out of this ghetto. That's a joke.
But
it's one of them jokes that's just like going, oh, damn.
Right.
But the fourth way is not play pro ball, because that's a very small group of folks anyway that gets to do that. And that seems to create just as many problems as it seeks to remedy, right? Playing professional football. But living on government assistance. Maybe government, living on welfare or whatever it is probably bringing us back to the problem to begin with. And I don't mean to sound like some anti-welfare advocate or something like that, but a lot of these problems did not arise until the Great Society of the 60s. Now we're three or four generations deep into people living on welfare and it just being kind of an endless cycle. I mean, absolutely, people use welfare to lift themselves up. Absolutely, people rely upon, especially right now, a lot of people that maybe are dipping into welfare, dipping out of welfare, right? Using, supplemental, food and housing and using that as a safety net to then springboard themselves into self-sufficiency. That happens. And I'd like to think it happens all the time. Maybe it does. I don't have statistics to prove or disprove that in front of me.
I'm sure
now.
It does all happen all the time. Right. But I'd like to what also happens all the time
is people just get stuck there.
Is that
because
right.
There's absolutely no motivation.
And if you have a...
And it's scary to me because if you look at
grandmother...
The urban planning of this town, the way it's been set up and laid out, there are huge parts of the city that have gotten so old and have decayed to such a point that there's no fixing a lot of these houses, and they're just going to get torn down. A lot of the construction is maybe, salvageable, but a lot of these, so many houses on the east side, the idea of putting a roof on might be the exact value of what the house is worth. Putting $10,000-$15,000 into a house to have the roof reframed and done might be the exact value of the house. So is there a point in doing that, especially if the interior of the house has suffered damage through neglect or if there's been water damage? All these things, right. And you just go like, a lot of these houses are never going to be inhabited by an owner-occupant who is invested in the community.
Right.
So, so many neighborhoods are like that. I was talking to a person I know that was involved with the community in regards to the 27th and Prospect area where they're building that new police station.
Right.
And he was saying that area actually had close to 70% occupancy. As far as the neighborhood on the east side, that's pretty amazing.
Right, that's
70% occupancy.
Still good.
And, you know, where a lot of the surrounding area was more like 30 or 40%. I mean, I know a guy who lives over on 22nd and Highland. No. Yeah. On the other side of Brooklyn, whatever the street is, on the first street on the other side of Brooklyn. It's not Highland. Highland's on this side of Brooklyn. The whatever the first street is on the east side of Brooklyn. Park, maybe.
Olive Park.
I think it's Park. Yeah. Literally, there are three houses on his street that people live in. And the next block over, there is no... I mean, it's a ghost town. There's nobody living over there. And there's two...
Vacant houses.
Vacant houses. And there's two ways to look at that and be like, well, that's good. You know? It's quiet. It's real quiet. But it's a little... I mean, it's also got to be... You know, I mean, it's just a magnet for people who have nowhere else to go, you know, who are doing something illegal or, you know, strung out on drugs or whatever it is. Just a problem. So then you go, the planning of it all. I mean, can we tear down the entire urban core, you know, where it is completely and totally, when it has gotten to the point where it's like 10, 15% occupancy, to then just build more police stations? I mean, what is the solution here?
Let me just thinking, right? Let me just throw this back to the part of the conversation that we had last week about giving, and we were talking about foreign aid and that. But remember, I was talking about the podcast I was listening to where they were talking about, you know, just giving people money. I don't know if you remember that, and like them going like. Suddenly people did exactly that. Like, they went to these villages, and it's like the people with grass roofs, which are the poorest of the poor, give them $1,000, which is like a year's salary, right? Because if you take this police department, and here's where I'm at, okay? You take this police department that they're building, and how many millions of dollars are they spending, and where's that actually going other than to, like, you know, the nutters and the duns and the, you know what I mean? To the people who don't live over there.
Right.
To the people who live over where we were talking about earlier with the schools and the grand society, right? Like, you know, that's who's getting that money in reality. Sure, there's a handful of people getting some $10 an hour porter jobs or something on the construction site, but even the construction workers are mostly coming from the suburbs. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so you're spending these gazillions of dollars on building another freaking plank in the police state. What if you did some kind of like rehomesteading or, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you could, homeless guy plots that house out, he can have it.
Homeless guy does?
He can have that house and the 20 grand it would take to make it, well, it would probably take more than 20 grand to make it exactly habitable. But you know what I mean? Some kind of restarting mechanism. I mean, it's, I'm not fully thought out on it, but you know what I'm saying? Some other way of directly infusing that capital in a wide dispersion, not in a concentrated, like, we're going to build this police department or build this shopping center or build this monstrous thing that then turns out that, again, like I said, most of the money is really going to the people who already have.
It's like the Citadel Plaza, that area,
right?
That's...
Developers make...
63rd and Prospects... North of 63rd Street on Prospect.
Mm-hmm. They're still sitting there with all the asbestos and all that other
jazz. Made the Wall Street Journal this last week. I mean, did somebody
really...
Did
it really?
It did. The idea of urban blight.
Like that old plan development. Or whatever they're trying to do now.
No, just as an example of, wow, y'all really messed that one up.
Right.
Yeah, they made the Wall Street Journal, made national news. Because
how much, was it something, it was like 20 millions, right?
Right, that was huge chunks of money. And then all of a sudden you have all these problems that arise because it was not planned out well. And the idea that you tear down neighborhoods when you already have an immense amount of vacant land in the city. To think that Target's going to move into 63rd and Prospect. Did anyone get them to sign a document? I mean,
that would be the thing that you,
Target,
you would want, is a document.
Target was going to move into 63rd and Prospect? No, I don't think so. I mean, we can't just rely upon the Dollar General, the Family Dollar, and what's the other one? Dollar Tree to provide.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it is. They're about to build another Dollar General on Troost, I think on 42nd Street. And nobody wants that. Nobody in that neighborhood wants another Dollar General. But they're going to do it. They built a Dollar General. There used to be a mural on 57th and Troost. No, 58th and Troost, right across the street from the auto parts store. On a building, and then they tore that building down. I don't think there was anything in that building, but the building wasn't. It wasn't an eyesore necessarily.
Problem with buildings, though, is that are they suited to?
But they tear this building down.
Wants to be there.
It had a lovely mural of a young black man with his brain in chains, pulling the chains off, screaming, and I think it said education on the chain.
All right.
Break free from the problems of, I guess the implication would be slavery.
Of your mind, yeah.
Through education. And they tore that down and built a Dollar General. And then they're going to build another Dollar General.
Just down, a mile
on
down 40 the road.
I mean, right. Just build these Dollar Generals that literally are made out of corrugated steel. They're those buildings that they, you know, the semi shows up and they unload the building and then they build the building in a day kind of building.
Yeah. And it's
which I'm surprised. I was driving by one of those dollar stores and they were advertising the price of Newports. It's like the Family Dollar sells cigarettes? I was surprised by that. I didn't think the Family Dollar would sell cigarettes.
Because you thought family in the name, it was going to be
family
store.
Right.
Yeah,
that's what I assumed. But maybe Newport's for the whole family.
Went down to the Walmart family.
They shut down the Family Dollar over on, I guess that would be essentially Meyer and Troost because of a rat infestation. It was so bad, the health department, you know it's rough when the health department of Kansas City shuts you down. You know that there's been some issues. Because they do play. So when they actually do come and shut you down, you know there's some serious issues. But this, I mean, just these race to the bottom. I mean, you want to talk about not serving the community at all. Family Dollar, folks.
Right. It's
I mean,
stepping down from Walmart. I mean, it's that same. Like, Walmart is not going to build a store on 39th and Prospect, but I would not be at all surprised to find a Family Dollar being built. Or
there
a
isn't
dollar
a Family
General.
Dollar on 39th and Prospect?
There might be or plans.
Jake,
anyway.
Do a Google Earth street view.
I know there's one on like 53rd.
And all that stuff on 55th. That new construction, that center block construction they did on 55th and Prospect.
Right, 55th, right.
So it's. Again.
Which was kind of another one of those old school ideas, right? Like, the highway has come through, so now this will reinvigorate this corner or this, you know, intersection, and that's not really.
Well, the people, I mean, the business owners on Prospect fought to keep their block. I mean, that was one of the big things that was fought for when 71, you know, was finalized.
Was not to have it just as a
not to have on off ramps, but to have intersections there.
Right.
So you would, I mean, which has been, I think, a traffic pain in the butt, but it saved you know, those businesses that were there, and you know,
it's still faster than driving.
Well, maybe so.
Out of Prospect to get to 71.
Well, sure.
You know what I mean? It's right. It's a fair compromise.
But saving those businesses, I think, was the big key to all that. But it's just quite amazing how there's really no, you know, sensical urban planning that takes place at all, whatsoever. You really just have to rely on, I mean, like, take what's taking place, what's going to happen, for all intents and purposes, at the former site of Bannister Mall, Hypermart, the Hillcrest, you know, capitalist pagoda that used to exist there, where literally the only thing left out there is a Burlington Coat Factory. It's a place called Gen X, which, for people who can't afford to shop at Burlington Coat Factory, I guess, offers them a place to go buy clothing. I mean, out of that entire area, the old Bannister Mall area, all that's
right.
left
Hypermart.
Two businesses.
Right.
God, and it's a disturbing place. If you've not been out there, go out there just to feel creeped out. I mean, this huge, vacant Hypermart that has these massive signs that say, attention, I'd like to get exactly how it's worded, but it says, this building has been, you know, stripped of all copper, electrical wire,
really,
water pipes, anything of value has already been removed. So back up, because Walmart has no intention of going back there ever.
Right.
I mean, it would be more likely that Walmart would convert those into FEMA camps for the detention of American citizens than that will ever have a blue light, on aisle 6. I think that's Kmart, but because that's never. But what's going to go in there? Cerner wants to build a massive complex out there over the next 10 years.
And I think they are going to be doing that.
That's, oh, I think they will be
they've
too.
They've kind of banked that in. They're making. I mean, they're.
No, and Cerner's great.
A booming tech.
Yeah, no, Cerner's great. It employs a lot of people. It's a one-of-a-kind type of deal. I mean, you know, Cerner is great for the economy of Kansas City. There's no question about that. And they're also good for the pride of Kansas City, because if it wasn't for Cerner, none of the sports teams in Kansas City would ever win anything at all. Because some of the Cerner people own Sporting KC. Which, if you want to be a Kansas City sports fan, you might have to just start
that
watching
might be
soccer.
Something you better learn to appreciate
right? Which people say it's fun to go out there. I haven't done it yet. Maybe I'll take the kids out there sometime to the former Livestrong Park, now just Sporting Park, I believe they call it. But they're going to build that. But it's just kind of okay. Well, that's good, because what did they wanted to build the Sporting KC, you know, the Wizards Park, the Livestrong Park. They wanted to build that
at the Bannister Mall site.
You know, and that's part of the reason I believe why they tore down the old Bannister Mall.
I forget what happened with that. Was it did they just come in with a better deal from
in the West
KCK?
End? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Absolutely.
Was there
more of a guarantee in KCK?
Quit dragging in KC Mall.
Well, you got to think too. Where would you rather be? If you were in charge, if you were the business.
The very outer ring of the city.
Well, would you want to be on 435 and 71, or would you want to be?
I think that would be a better spot as far as.
But it's there's nothing else out there.
Accessibility. The only thing I'm thinking is, like, I have talked to people who.
The only other businesses out there are Burlington.
On the other edge of the
are Burlington Coat Factory,
right.
Gen X, and Motel Incest.
But what was out at that? Like, I remember 6, 7,
no,
eight
but when they built
years
this
before they built all that Sporting Park and all the...
Right, but all that stuff...
Well, they had already started building with the Legends and everything.
The Legends was already built.
Right.
They already had that perversity
the Legends
there.
Has lucked out.
WesternWine.com.
Because of the Cerner buildings. They've got two, or they've got one, and they're building a second. And then they've got all the little water parks and stuff out there.
Right, right, right.
That have.
So, the bottom line perspective, where you're going to go, oh yeah, let's definitely build this here in the middle of a vapid and vacant wasteland.
Right, which is what the legends was 20 years ago.
No. That was the neighborhood.
What I want to say is the Bannister. Bannister was what the legends is, like this.
Yeah, very similar.
New,
fair enough.
New economic boon. Doggle.
Boondoggle.
You thought it was a boon, and it was a doggle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was.
Legends is a perverse place that I do not travel to.
Right, and it's one of those places. It would have.
I
don't think it will now. I think it would have been like the Bannister would have like had this lifespan of, you know, they're all here, they outlive their tax breaks.
But you know why the legends will
all go away.
Will always work. One word.
Cerner. No.
NASCAR.
NASCAR. Right. Right. And they built those things out there. And then, you know, so kudos to them for putting that little idea together, because
but think
they
about
could
it like
have easily
this.
Done that. All of that stuff could have fit at Bannister.
You look at a place like the Bannister Mall area, and you think the idea of civic planning and the way that we want our city to look. There's no way for the city of Kansas City, for the city council, the mayor, the city manager, any of these people to do anything but just go, please businesses, please come. This is available. I mean, how much do you think Cerner is paying for that area? I mean, they're getting a good deal.
Right.
You know, they're getting a real good deal. As well they should, right? I can understand. I mean, if I was responsible politically for that area of town, or if I was the mayor of this town, I would go, yes, absolutely. Anything we can do to get you to do that. You know, let's turn this area that is downright freaky into something that people can go, all right, this is a tax base. There's economic activity going on here. Because you're going to have all kinds of businesses able to be out there because Cerner's going to have 9,000 jobs or something like that.
Right.
But it's going to be an immense economic benefit. But it's not something that you can go, good job, Kansas City. Good job for doing that. I mean, it's just Cerner. It's just business that has done that. You don't have any civic economic planning. This whole idea that you have the city doing economic development, being a driving force for it, all they can do is try to compete or race to the bottom when it comes to tax and incentives. You know, and this is the interesting thing is that, I mean, look at what Brownback has done in Kansas. With this idea of having
right,
changing the tax structure for businesses to what?
Re-low.
Yeah.
Come on over.
Really low. Because that's all they can do. But there's no other bottom line but that. And it's not like you can do something that has, there's not a position of negotiation beyond that. There's no other, oh, well, we need this from you for you to do this here kind of benefit to our
right.
community. It's just, please, please, please. But we'll hop up on the casting couch, whatever it takes. You want us to bend over and touch our toes? Absolutely. Consider it done. And, you know, it's just, it's frustrating in that that's the nature of things. And everything is of course, dependent upon corporation and company to do it. So then that brings us back to the ghetto of Kansas City. You know, which, I mean, hell, Bannister Mall is the ghetto of Kansas City now. I mean, that is just more ghetto. You know, how do you get anything to change? You know, there was a story, you know, last week that the Ball supermarket chains have a distribution center that they're moving from KCK to 18th in Indiana, which is good. And they did it with no, there was no tax breaks,
incentive package,
no TIF, no one, they just like, we like the location, it's close to I-70,
right.
You know, the warehouse is good for us. It's not going to add any jobs into that area at all, but it's just like, okay, good. Here's something. Here's a warehouse that will no longer be vacant. And in the news article about the moving of the Chass Ball supermarket distribution center. There were several other cases of East Side businesses that had bought new machinery, had done something to their property, had added 50 jobs, something along those lines. And you're going, great. Absolutely. That's what you need. But when literally the only manufacturing job left is at Burlington Coat Factory, and there's no other way for people to have, there's no other, you know, engine for growth in the community. I mean, what else is there? And I mean, certainly this, you know, the city has programs that will help people who are low income. There are federal grants and there are other grants. Help people do development on their house. Help people, you know, change out the lead windows and paint and all these other things. There's all kinds of programs that are available, it's true. But by and large, something needs to be more than just free money. Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
It's like if you feed
and my only point
if you
in
feed
that.
A man a fish, he'll eat for a day.
Right.
If you teach a man how to bread that fish in cornmeal, he can get a job at Lufties.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like one of those things.
Well, it was, my point was not that is the ideal solution, but that's perhaps a better use of those millions than just refunneling it. You know what I'm saying? Not to that community.
Right.
But, you know, you're helping out the Johnson County.
But every time
school district, they
put some sort of fund initiative on the ballot, you know, a quarter cent tax, a bond issue, whatever it is, for law enforcement. Now that passes.
No problem.
That always passes. Now we can have an urban homesteading act. I mean, that's a scary thing because all that anyone can come up with in regards to a place like Detroit, which could serve potentially as a future for all of America's inner city, right? That could be the template where they literally start to tear down huge parts of the city, which is what they're doing in Detroit because it's cheaper to move people out of very low, you know, density areas of town instead of providing, you know, the basic services. You know, fire, electricity,
but
water,
how does that work? Do they like just say, look, you got to come up out of here. And,
yeah, people are not.
I know your house is.
People are not happy about it.
I'm sure.
But when literally one person lives on a block of 20 houses,
right?
I mean, the water lines. I mean, just the simple the sewer lines. I mean, it gets to a point where it makes no sense whatsoever to have that person there, unless you're going to make them, you know, drill a well and get a septic tank, you know. And just go, yeah, if you need an ambulance, you're going to have to use
right,
life. You're going to have to use life
fire
flight.
Services or...
Right, buy an extinguisher and get some life flight insurance so they can send the helicopter out if you go into cardiac arrest.
Because there won't be any roads.
I mean, is that the template? Is that the future? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe it is. I mean, and that's... I mean, that's downright scary as hell, if you think about it. Where literally huge parts of the town, and all that anyone can come up with as a solution in that model is urban farming. It will take this huge acreage, square mileage of inner city and return it back to farmland. I mean, that's just downright goofy to me. I mean, it really is goofy to me. Not that I love the idea of urban farming. I think it's great. I do not think, however, that it is a solution to the destruction of the inner city. Maybe it's part of the solution. Fair enough. Maybe there's a piece of solution there. But it can't be the whole
and
story.
And even like this urban farming schemes that you're talking about, I would imagine that they're just for certain parts, not all of the
I'm just saying that's all any,
that
anyone can
come back. I mean,
that's all
right.
that anyone can come up with.
Right, and that means you still
this green
end up
space.
With all this green space.
Let's grow some potatoes.
Yeah, I mean, but even so, you're only talking about taking some portion of that green space. You're still going to have all that, and there is no other plan that you could, you know, I mean, to build prisons.
There you go.
You
now
know
you're
what
talking.
I mean? It's like,
now you're
yeah,
talking.
We could build prisons or sports complexes, but we've already got,
but
if you're
know
Detroit,
what?
You've already got a baseball, football stadium, and basketball's covered, so really, what
hockey.
Are you going to...
Yeah. They probably have a soccer team, too. I have no idea.
How would...
They probably do. They turn the city into one big open-air...
All it is a stadium.
Oh, one big stadium.
America's stadium.
I mean, it's interesting in that...
Stadium of the Americas.
Detroit is losing everything but their division in baseball.
Isn't that crazy?
Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny how that works? They're losing everything but their division in baseball.
Gotta have something.
And maybe that's part of the point. Maybe that's part of the point.
About baseball, Ben. That's the end of my... impersonation or baseball, right? You remember that?
Oh, right. From you do it.
Field of Dreams. Well, right. What is his name?
James
Earl
Jones.
Jones, yeah.
Baseball, Ray. I can't hear it either.
Right.
That man's voice is so low. Mr. Darth Vader. All right. Well, does nobody out there care about any of this stuff at all? We're sitting here talking local civic issues. Shall we talk about chemical warfare in Syria? You know, things are so bad in Syria, Mike, that they're finding themselves as refugees in Iraq.
Yeah, I heard you saying that. That's
how bad things are in Syria, that folks are crossing the border into Iraq going, thank God we're here now. That's messed up.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense at all. Well, you can call 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. Or you can email paragonradio@gmail.com, the website for the radio show, paragonradio.blogspot.com, or gofindtheothers.com. All kinds of stuff up here and up there. So what about, we can change subjects because clearly nobody cares about local issues here, and that's fine. Anything in the paper today?
You know, I was just looking at this thing, and I'm trying to get my head around this KCI terminal thing that
complex.
Seems to be some sort of an inevitability.
Sure.
And it's like the people have roundly said it's not needed, necessary, don't want it.
Yeah, Sam Graves, the... congressman from that part of the world
has fought against it.
He doesn't want it.
And now there's some, and I'm just looking at the paper from yesterday, and it says Graves to play a key role in KCI decision. This, and they say right there in the little subhead.
He's opposed to it, though.
Right. Congressman has fought against a single terminal, but supporters of the plan hope they can reach a compromise. So... they're going to try and give them a little something.
I mean, I guess they're going to end up with a single terminal eventually because they're saying they're consolidating everything out there. There's just not nearly the need for the three terminals the way there used to be the need. But I just find it kind of interesting. They just spent $250 million redoing that entire airport in the last 10 years, less than 10 years ago. They redid the whole thing. Spent a bunch of money.
And I would...
Nothing wrong with the airport.
I would kind of condense their arguments to, though, that $250 million was to, you know, improve three terminals. Whereas what they want to do is to make it to where future... outlays like that will be for one terminal, so they would like extend that life. But
it's more just I mean, but
I'm not with it.
Resident, how do residents of Kansas City feel about the airport? Because the argument always becomes for people coming here from somewhere else. Are we making Kansas City more accessible to tourists? Are we making it more accessible to conventioneers,
et cetera? Passers through.
And who cares?
That's what I'm thinking.
I mean, who really cares? I mean, look at all they've done with downtown to make it better for, you know, non-Kansas Cityans. Great. I mean, they built this. I mean, the toy train that they want to put down down Main Street, that's not for people that live here.
Right.
If you wanted to have a train that actually helped people that live here, you need to put it down I-35,
right.
71, and
I-70.
Get from
Olathe to downtown.
Right. If you had a train running along I-70, I-35, I-29, you know, because I-29 becomes 71 when you cross the river anyway.
Right.
That would actually make sense. That would be a real commuter train that would actually affect some change. And, you know, Mike Sanders, for all that he is or isn't, the county legislator for...
County executive,
correct. The executive of all the legislators. He is the...
He's the man that gets done.
I guess he is. And you know, for all that the county is or is not, he did have some good points in regards to if you want to actually have a cost-effective, meaningful train in Kansas City, put commuter rail lines on existing rail infrastructure. Done.
That seems to me
pretty logical.
That's the way you do it.
Right. Seems like it makes a lot of sense.
I mean, it would...
But now, you know, they're saying that if we get the GOP convention in 2016, if we have the toy train running down Main Street...
It'll pay for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go.
Because those... What's a convention pool? Maybe 30,000 people?
Oh, more than that, I bet.
You think? I just find that so... Well, the whole convention idea is kind of pointless now with the way that they've stacked the cards on the...
No, conventions are completely meaningless.
Right.
They have no value whatsoever. They used to have value. I mean, anyone that's been alive for any amount of time will tell you they can remember when you didn't know who the nominee was going
right.
to be leading up to the convention.
And now they're going to Super Tuesday everything to where there's three votes.
Well, they out Super Tuesday, right? I mean, how many states had their primaries before Super Tuesday last election cycle? They were...
What I mean. They
Super Tuesday
end up
wasn't
like
even super.
This Tuesday is Super Tuesday for these 17 states, and then this one is for these 17, and then there you are. You got it. Three Super Tuesdays, and we've got ourselves a trifecta.
All right, somebody's interested in a conversation that we're having. Maybe. 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI, you're on the radio.
Yes, sir. I was listening to the... conversations is moving from one topic to another, so it's kind of hard to tell whether a person would be interested in interjecting on something I've already talked about. But they were talking about the light rail situation, and I've been a resident of Kansas City for most of my life, and I'm 66 years old, and I've watched trolley buses come and go, and the bus system did evolve and devolve as it has, as we spread to the suburbs. But I always thought if there's an idea where you wanted to put a light rail somewhere, start with a bunch of buses, and for 1 year, just simply put buses on that route and see if anybody uses the buses before you drop out all the millions of dollars to drop rails into the ground and everything else. Put buses. If people use the buses, then maybe they want to use the light rail. If they don't use the buses, the light rail is a joke, at least for that route.
Well,
I've never heard anybody say that before,
well,
yet I've heard people talk around it a few times over the years.
Well, here's something that they are doing. They just started, I think, this year, is they have buses, the commuter buses that come in from the burbs, at least along I-35, now have right-of-way on the shoulders. So,
sure.
So conceivably, you're stuck in traffic, and here comes a bus whizzing by, and you go like, man, wouldn't it be nice to avoid all this traffic and hop on the Joe? But
well, it's interesting, too, because to the gentleman's point, I mean, the Troost Max and the Max Bus, which go down, you know, Main Street and Troost, respectively, those are the old rail car lines. That's exactly mm-hmm. the north-south route that the trolley, you know, cars right. ran before they were removed in the 50s. And I
right.
believe both those, I think the Max line, when that came out and when they started doing that in 2004, was popular enough that they were able to add another down Troost. And I think those are probably the two most popular, most ridden routes within the city that don't go outside of actual Kansas City. I mean, would they be popular enough to warrant putting down rail lines? Probably not.
Because I would say not. Because
but I don't know. I don't have the facts or figures in front of me to say yes or no. I would just guess that no.
Somebody used the word, I think I heard the word, the term toy train, moving it down Main Street from the plaza to downtown.
Oh, it's Crown Center to downtown. It doesn't go all the way to the plaza.
Oh gosh. Then it's not doing anything for people that need to get to work. That's the only places that need to have anything, and it needs the places where there's a lot of jobs from one place to where a lot of people live. I grew up in the inner city over around 37th and Paseo, 33rd and Brooklyn in the 60s and 50s, and watched that whole neighborhood become what it is today in slow motion. And it saddens me that it happened. And I know why it happened, because there's no work there. You have to go somewhere else to get work. So the toy trains have to go from where houses are to where jobs are, and that's it. And if you can't make that statement, where are the jobs and where are the people that can get to the jobs and are the and the people have the skills to get those jobs, then putting these trains out is just an exercise in civil engineering. It's employing people with degrees, but it's not getting people, low-income people, jobs. And I'm an engineer without a job simply because there's not enough of them, so I'm having to do other things. I'm most highly educated lawn boy in Overland Park, okay? I do a lot of things.
Right.
But it really saddens me to see that the manufacturing base is what it's all about, as much as anything. If you want to spend any money on anything, somehow try to figure out how to create places that make things, like you talked about the Burlington Coat Factory. You need 25 of those. Yeah, not Burlington's necessarily, but 25 somethings that medium to level people can get into without a degree. And otherwise, you haven't done anything for anybody.
Right, that's right.
Not by building trains, you know, put buses on it, run an experimental route, get a government grant if there's such a thing to build your what I call light rubber bus. That's what I want to call it. Not light rail, light rubber bus.
I think you probably have, you know, I-35 and I-29 and I-70 probably have buses, I-71, that, you know, express routes to go up and down. But, you know, primarily if you're talking about people who live far away from where they work, I think the motivation is if they don't have a car when they get that job, they're going to use the money they do get from that job to buy a car as soon as possible, because it's a luxury thing that, you know, when the city was expanded in the time you're talking about, in the 50s and the 60s, and suburbanization happened, the civic planning of Kansas City ended around that time. There was no longer a central master plan that was coherent and beneficial for the city after that time. And it's pretty clear, you look around and you just see how, you know, the interstates have constricted our urban core and made it to where to have any type of, you know, perceived standard of living, you need to have a vehicle. You need to have your own car. But
that's true enough. Buses were far more, to use a $25 word, ubiquitous when I was growing up. On Woodland, seemed like every cross street had a bus line and a major schedule. And they came even in the middle of the night. I used to ride from 33rd and Brooklyn Street and worked at the Kansas City Star. This is not the only job a kid in the neighborhood could get, you know, and $1.25 an hour, and we thought it was a big money. But that's about it. And there wasn't much going on, but there sure was plenty of bus service. And it went, seemed like it went everywhere, but I got to remember the city limits ended at 5th Street. Okay, so it wasn't so big, so there's plenty of buses. When the city busted out into suburbs, then buses became sparse. Bus service became sparse. And it wouldn't be so bad. Nobody could care. If the jobs were there, people would ride them if they had to go 20 miles. I believe they would ride 20 miles to get to work if there was a job to get to. It's like me as an engineer. If there's a job to get to, I'm going to get there. When I grew up, we didn't have a car. My mother raised my brother and I by herself as a waitress, and we had bicycles and buses and shoes. We walked, and that's it.
But there's not, right,
I'm
like you said,
I feel sorry for myself. I'm just saying that's all there was.
If there's no, you know, reasonable way to get there or nowhere to go to, then good luck. All right, my friend, we appreciate your phone call.
Thank you. I'm glad that you gave me a chance to talk. Sorry, I'm venting a little bit because of my history back in the inner city. But I've seen the picture, and I see it clearly pretty much. I don't have a solution, unfortunately, to add to your conversation.
I think the solution is to turn it into a parking lot. I mean, I'm not sure what the solution is either, my friend. I know that it's we can build more police stations. You know, we can tear more blocks of town down. I don't
Frisbee golf course.
A Frisbee golf course. That would be very nice.
Or disc golf.
Yeah.
But I mean,
unless you create 25 jobs at the golf course, then you made a dent. Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. But I mean, building a toy train through downtown that will do nothing but make people feel good about themselves. And write it as kind of a, being that it's cute. You know, doing it because it's fun to do, not because it's practical to do. It's like back in the 80s when they started having those trolleys that were just buses with trolley outsides.
I remember them. Mm-hmm.
And they cost twice as much as riding the bus did. And there was no other reason to ride those but because it wasn't the bus, and you felt like you were being cute by doing so.
Right.
You didn't ride it because you had to get to work or you had somewhere to go.
It was a pretty sunny day, and I just wanted to see.
Yeah,
the city.
I just wanted to go down to Ground Center from Westport.
If it's fun and profitable, they'd have been tail to tail all the way up and down Main Street. You know, if it was a tourist attraction that could make money, hey, let's put it in there.
Right.
You know, but I don't see it paying for itself. Create jobs while you're building it, but when it's like housing, when it's built, you're done.
Right. No, that's true. That's true. Well, we appreciate your phone call, my friend. You take care and have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. You are on the radio.
All right. I just listen to you guys talking. You guys ever been to Chicago?
Sure. Yeah.
They got a train system that goes up and down the highway from the suburbs
absolutely.
To the city.
Absolutely. It goes right along the highway, and I think it even uses existing rail line.
It's highly functional.
Or at least
Chicago
millions of
never,
people go to work every
there,
day.
There are two. There are. There is a.
There's commuter rail.
Commuter,
and then there's the elevated train.
Rail.
Right. But Chicago was built up around a train, and it has been planned around the train the whole time. Kansas City was built up around the train, and then they removed the train, and now it's, you know, it's gone. It's never going to come
back. I grew up in
back.
Chicago. My uncle used to always freak out about how spread out Kansas City was, like how big of an area and how few people that area.
I'm sure Kansas City is twice the size of Chicago in regards to land.
Yeah, and you can see they planned ahead up until like the 50s or 60s, like you were saying. 435 was a circle. It was a functional. You know, that 435 South magazine, I always say I'm in the loop because they're all whacked out down below. But
well, I don't
know.
They
did plan at one time.
What was 435 wasn't completed until probably the 80s.
Well, and I don't think it's complete yet, is it?
Well, now it's
I think there's still a little gap.
No.
No, it's a circle.
You can make the circle. I remember driving. Don't ask me why. I remember just driving the entire 435 circle back in, it would have been 89, 90. And I don't remember that being like, let me ride this new thing. Yeah, I don't know. How long has 435 been out there? Do you see it, Wikipedia?
When did they start that plan? That's what I'm curious, because somebody had a good plan.
Hold on. Just calm down. I-435 was built piece by piece starting in the mid-1960s and not finished until 1987.
Wow.